Today's Institute for Healthcare Improvement program is part two of six in the series on improving access and efficiency in the clinical office. And today's title is Understanding Supply and Demand. And at this time, it's my pleasure to introduce your IHI moderator for today, Ms. Joanna Jeskolka. Joanna is project manager at the Institute for Healthcare Improvement and is currently working on the office practices and outpatient settings domain for the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's Impact Network. Joanna, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kurt, and good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Improving Access and Efficiency in the Clinical Office Calls to Action series. Last week, Dr. Mark Murray led us through the new paradigm of office redesign. Today, Dr. Gordon Moore will take us into the changed concept of understanding supply and demand. We hope you have taken our advice and arranged for several members of your organization to participate as a team in this learning experience. As Kurt mentioned, you can fax or email your questions in as we go through the didactic portion of today's call. I'd now like to introduce our faculty for today's call. Dr. Gordon Moore is a family medicine physician in solo practice in Rochester, New York. He is an assistant professor in family medicine and community and preventative medicine at the University of Rochester and is faculty for the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. Please now refer to page one of the presentation materials as you received, as Dr. Gordon Moore will begin our audio conference series today. Gordon?
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the call. We're going to talk about supply and demand today, and I'm going to leave lots of time for questions at the end because I understand at the end of the last call there were quite a number of questions for Mark Murray. The idea of open access may seem counterintuitive, but I know from working it in my own practice as well as helping implement this in many others that it is quite a breath of fresh air when we can understand the nature of the demand coming at us and we can meet it without trying to change the way human nature works. So that's what today is going to be about. How do we understand the demand? How do we get a handle on that, put our finger on the pulse, and then how do we craft a supply or capacity to meet that demand? So let's start then walking down the objectives. We're going to talk about learning ways to measure demand and supply, understand how to balance the supply and demand in managing your practice, and then finally understand how to plan for fluctuating demand. Let's start first with the rationale. There's often an imbalance between the work and the capacity of the team that degrades the output. When we are challenged with more demand than we can meet, we start to put barriers in the way, and I know that Mark addressed that in the paradigm of open or advanced access in the first call. We start to delay, start to push things off to the future, and unfortunately what this buys us, instead of creating space, we've begun to do inefficient work, work without compensation of queue management and things like that. So we also see that there's a cost in terms of patient satisfaction. There might be a cost in patient safety as well. There's certainly, unfortunately, a cost in terms of morale, and then often an overtime as we have to pay people to stay late to make up for the work we weren't able to meet. I would like to mention that in complex settings and specialty practices, there are some added variables. We'll talk about that some on the call today, and depending on the nature of the questions and the folks on the call, we can get into more or less of that. Primary care practices are relatively straightforward in terms of understanding the nature of capacity and demand. We add a layer of complexity when we have several things going on in, let's say, a cancer center or any clinical setting that has procedural interventions going on in a separate process. So in complex and specialty practices, we need to understand capacity and demand for multiple patient processes, multiple providers, as well as multiple services and interventions. On the fifth slide, we need to start with critical questions about what we're trying to understand, because that's going to give us a framework of understanding what's happening in our system. We have to start with the very first question: what's the system that we're trying to address? Are we talking about just our endoscopy unit? Are we talking only about Dr. Smith's practice? Are we talking about the whole clinical enterprise, the provider group, multi-specialty practice? Second, we ask a very fundamental question: is the gross allocation of resources correct? Do we have the right folks? Do we have a terrific imbalance in the way we staff different parts of our system or different parts of our practice? Third, what's the constraint resource? Where do we find bottlenecks? Where do we get backed up? Fourth, why does the flow occur in a way that's less than ideal? And fifth, what would make a more ideal flow attractive? Those are the questions that launch the work. That's what we're going to address now for the rest of this phone call. It starts with estimating demand. On slide 6, you'll see an example from a practice in the Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota. Number of acute appointments made by date. And so here you see a practice that began to understand what was coming at them. And you can see that there's quite a bit of fluctuation all the way in the early days between 40 to 110, 120 acute appointments made in any given day, and it goes up and down. So we can see there's some stuff going on there, but there might be a relatively consistent band somewhere between maybe 50 and 100. Something's happening towards the latter part of that graph, but this practice is beginning to understand what's coming at them so that they can begin to configure a team, they can begin to think about how to extinguish unnecessary demand and figure out whether or not they're staffed appropriately. So here's a practice that began to understand that. We're going to talk about the specifics of how in a little bit. Take a look at the next slide. This is, again, community pediatrics in Mayo, in Rochester, Minnesota. Daily number of routine appointments. The first was acute appointments, and these guys decided they'd like to also understand the routine because then they have a much better picture of the full demand in their practice. And again, you can see a relatively consistent band of demand somewhere between 80 and 120 routine appointments per day coming into this relatively large setting. And then something they're doing towards the end is seeing that demand tail off. We don't know exactly what's going on, but again, they have a handle on what's happening in their practice. Third slide here, estimating daily demand, daily number of made appointments for throat cultures and immunizations for community pediatrics. Again, they're looking at how much of this is coming in any particular day. This practice is trying to find out, again, what's coming at them. And if any practice wants to start working towards a same-day appointment availability or a specialty practice maybe same week, they have to know the nature of the demand coming at them. So these three slides give the community pediatrics group a very clear understanding of the type of work that's coming at them. They know roughly how many immunizations and throat cultures might come on an average day. If they averaged over a week, that we'd see a lot less variation from low to high, and they could then begin to understand all the way from how many throat culture swabs to have, and as well as the type of staff they would need to have on hand. So here they're beginning to see what's happening. Any one of your practices, as you're moving ahead, you're going to need to do this work. And again, we'll talk about the specifics in just a bit. I do want to show you the next slide. We can take the understanding of demand to another level of depth if it's important to the practice. Some practices see that there's quite a variation of demand based on time of the day. And again, we're going to talk about how to staff to that if it's important to the practice. Some practices have a relatively even distribution of demand over the day. Many do not. So here's an example of a practice that chose to split out the demand by hour of the day. And we see on the next slide discharge times, their ultimate target and ED admits. This is an emergency department that was looking at when folks are coming in and when they can move their patients up to the floors once they had been admitted, and also when people were being discharged. You can decide to the level of depth that's important to your practice, but there's no way you're going to be able to move towards advanced or same-day access without doing this work of understanding the nature of demand. The next layer, once we have an idea of the volume of demand coming in for new patients for different types, we need to understand the different kinds of patient needs that are coming in. In my primary care practice, I may have new patients or existing patients, short appointments or long appointment type demand, and I may decide to get into the level of understanding where I can look at each one of those as a separate line if it's going to mean different work or different configuration of the team within my office practice. In a more complex setting, you'd need to look at issues like with or without procedures, with or without specialized testing, with or without other components of a complex system. For instance, if you're a pediatric developmental disease unit, you may have quite a number of different services you'd offer based on the patient needs and configure different teams and different flows based on that. So understand the needs of your patients, because you may need to create an understanding of demand in each of those different flows in a more complex setting. There tends to be a bit too much of the splitting out and teasing apart of demand at the primary care level, and Mark Murray probably mentioned the need to get away from all the different appointment types, because we find in many settings we've taken the teasing apart too far. We've had too much splitting for type of new patients or follow-up visits. In many practices, we'll look at a scheduling template and see we have a new patient quick visit for 15 minutes. We'll have a follow-up patient for 15 minutes. We'll have an ED follow-up for 15 minutes. When all of that work is 15 minutes, and we're not going to configure a different team or have different resources available, there's no point in teasing that apart. We'd want to step away from that, because that brings unnecessary work to the practice. If I will configure a different team, if I will use a different space or use different resources, then it is important, and I want to get to that level of understanding of what's happening in the practice. So now let's get to the how. If you've seen the different practices that I've shown you, they started with a discussion of the portals of entry. How does demand come to your clinical entity? Most will telephone for an appointment, but you may have patients who walk in. You may have patients who access your clinical enterprise directly from the emergency department or directly from an inpatient unit. You may have referral from primary care. How do patients come to you asking for your services? Each of these is a portal of entry, and once you have a list of those portals of entry, we need to put some counting mechanism in front of each of these portals so that we can begin to understand the volume of demand coming from each. So first, what are the portals of entry? Second, what's the rate of flow for each of these inputs? And third, depending on the level of specificity that you need for your practice, you'd like to understand the variation of these rates by hour, by day of week, by week, and by month. We know, for instance, in typical practice, the demand on a Monday is higher than any other day of the week. No surprise, we're typically not open Saturdays and Sundays, so there's some pent-up demand from the weekend. What you'll find almost invariably is that the nature of demand from a static patient population is quite steady over time. Obviously, with a larger patient pool, we'll see much less variation in day-to-day demands. The only variation we see would be from things like flu season, or school physical season, or Katie Couric goes on TV and says everybody ought to get a colonoscopy, and next thing you know, the phone rings off the hook. So that there's not, aside from factors like that, there's very little variation in the nature of demand from large static patient populations, which begins then to open the issue of why we have such huge fluctuations in our ability to meet the demand. And most of that comes from the fluctuations in our own capacity. And the next slide just describes the various portals of entry in a typical office practice. Telephone is going to be the number one portal of entry for most of our practices, but not all. Many deal with a significant volume of walk-ins. Follow-up patients, these are folks who are coming out of your own clinical enterprise and who are booking follow-up appointments within the practice. Hospital discharge or maybe other. One practice I saw had a significant volume of their schedule eaten up directly from the emergency department, because the emergency department had access to the electronic scheduling system, and because they wanted to look good with JACO, they made sure everybody leaving the emergency department was booked in with that internal medicine clinic, which was kind of unfortunate because of the high no-show rate. But know what the portals of entry are. Do you have other ones? If so, great. Figure out what they are and figure out how you're going to get some sort of counting in front of each one of those. Next, the types of demand. External demand, this is true demand. This is the patient population out there who wants to come to you for services of some kind, and they phone or walk in or show up in a bus or somehow arrive looking for an appointment. Then there's internal demand. Internal demand is driven by the return visit rate. And system demand. These are things that we do that can change the nature of demand. One of the things we found very consistently in practice is when we increase the rate at which patients see the provider of their choice, seeing the same person within the context of a more tightly functioning and coherent team, the nature of demand begins to tail off somewhat. So we see that continuity can change the nature of demand. In the next slide is an example of a telephone tracking log. This is one example created by Margie Godfrey up in Dartmouth that shows you can have quite a level of specificity in this. There are the days of the week and across in the columns, appointments for today, appointments for tomorrow, split out into AM and PM. The column headings may not be pertinent for your institution. You may choose to create something like this and put different column headings up there, Dr. A, Dr. B, Nurse Practitioner C. What makes the most sense for your practice is what you should use. This is the tool that you put in front of each of your portals of entry. This is the tool you put in front of the person who is getting the phone calls and making appointments. This is the tool that sits next to the person who's scheduling the follow-ups. This is the tool you put in front of the scheduler who sees what appointments are being scheduled through the emergency department or from an inpatient unit. The way we use this tool in practice is to say, for 1 week, let's take this tool. Once we've defined the portal of entry, we will go to each person who occupies a chair at a portal of entry and say, for 1 week, could you please make a hash mark in the correct column for the correct day of week for each appointment that you make. We have to be very careful when we're invoking this tool because we need to first have a conversation with each of these individuals, and it's best to get them all together to talk about this ahead of time and maybe even practice for a day. We say it's not for when the appointment is given. For instance, today is a Tuesday. I get a phone call and I make an appointment for next Wednesday. I don't mark off Wednesday. Today is Tuesday. I caught the call and I made an appointment, so I make a mark in the correct column under today, which is Tuesday, because that's when the demand came in. What we're looking for here is telephone or walk-in demand. We can't use our billing system for this information. Billing system misses those people who looked at waits and delays in our system and then left and went somewhere else. Our billing system can't tell us the volume of people who might have been seen in our office practice, but we have to deflect them to an urgent care setting or deflect them to an emergency department, not because they had an emergency situation, but because we just didn't have the capacity to see them that day. So the billing system is not a very good reflection of true demand. Putting a counting system in place like this is a much more accurate way of understanding demand, even when we sample for a week. This is extra work. This is people remembering to take time out of their flow and make a little hash mark in each of these columns. But if we do it for a week, we find that most staff are willing to pull it off. So everybody gets this sheet. They can write their name on it. They put the week that they're tracking at the top, week of, and they start making their marks. The mark is made when the person does the deed. In other words, I have scheduled an appointment for one of these column headings for the person who walked in or phoned in or through the computer system. So therefore, because if I catch the phone call and I transfer it to Nurse Bob, and he's the one who does the deed, Nurse Bob is the one who makes the mark, not me. I don't make a mark just for making a transfer. The person who does the deed of making meeting the demand for appointment, in other words, making the appointment, is the one who makes the hash mark. So there's a telephone tracking log. You can get this and like tools from qualityhealthcare.org, which is the website set up between IHI and the British Medical Journal. There are terrific tools on that website that will help you, that you can tailor for your organization as well. Or you can craft something brand new and use it. Telephone tracking on the next slide. Measure for 1 week. Use a tracking sheet at each portal of entry, column headings for the different categories that are important to your clinical enterprise, rows for the day of week, can be used at non-phone portals as well. You can get this tracking tool as well from www.clinicalmicrosystem.org. the next slide in telephone tracking 2, the person who makes the appointment is the person who makes note of the request on the day the request was made, not when the appointment will be. For instance, today is Tuesday, 10/28. I make a note in today's box for Dr. Smith, even though the appointment will be on 11:30 on a Thursday. So this is how we begin to understand demand. The next piece, obviously, is capacity, supply. How does our supply match demand? Is it close? Is it way off base? We find in almost every setting that it's pretty darn close. In only a few situations do we find that the nature of demand far outstrips capacity, and then we have to do something different. But in most places, we'll find a typical clinician will say, well, yeah, I've been practicing for 25 years, and it's always been about 2 months to get in with me for a physical, in which case, I'm keeping up with the work. So the demand and capacity do match, but we just have that delay. I know Mark spoke about that in the first phone call. We just need to get rid of that delay, go work through backlog, which will be in the next call. So let's analyze capacity. First, let's start with who do we have working in this clinical enterprise, which begs the question, what is our clinical enterprise? Who's working here? How do we configure ourselves? Typically, we have organizations set up in horizontal alignment. We have a bunch of administrative clerical folks who work together, nurses and clinicians working in sort of horizontal alignment. But let's find out who's the staff. For each staff role, how many hours is this person available per day and per week? And then, what would be their potential throughput? For each person's role, they could potentially check in how many patients per hour, check out, do vital signs, office visits. And next thing we want to look at is the physical capacity, the room capacity, hours of operation, and the use of rooms. These are going to be the input variables that will tell us whether or not we can meet the demand coming in. Here's the next slide is an example of that capacity analysis. We have two check-in staff that work about 35 hours a week going across the first row. We think maybe they could check in about 10 patients per hour, which gives us a weekly capacity of about 700. As you can see, that's not going to be the constraint variable in this setting. You look way down, and it's at procedure B, where we're going to have a constraint or problem if we exceed 20 in a week. So you go down the list and figure out what is important for your clinical enterprise, what rows are meaningful for you, and you can begin to populate this just by sitting down with each one of those individuals and saying, what might you pull off if you weren't being distracted, or what can you pull off in reality? We know that there are lots of things going on at check-in, and I'm not going to be only checking folks in. I'll be doing a lot of other things, but I think with everything else going on, I could still check in maybe eight folks per hour. So those are the numbers you put together. The next slide is a specific example from the Jimmy Fung Clinic at Beth Israel Deaconess, pediatric oncology outpatient. They were looking at capacity and demand and putting those two things together. So here's an example of across the columns, the different resources they have within their own clinic. Anesthetist, a nurse, phlebotomist, EKG tech, and x-ray tech. And in the rows, you have the total process minutes, including paperwork, for each one of these roles. Next row is actual estimated capacity, including breaks, calls, and lunch. And then the range of visits per day for each one of these. Obviously, these guys, in a very complex setting, were doing a very fine-tuned analysis to understand what is possible within their clinical setting. You may need this level of specificity in a complex setting, or this may be way too much for you, and you may need something a lot simpler. This gives you an example of how far you might take this if you really want to understand the nature of your capacity and whether or not it meets the demand. Here's where they've taken it in the next slide, understanding capacity. If you'll see the first row for vital signs, there's only one place to do vital signs. It's available for 480 minutes a day. It takes about 5 to 10 minutes per patient. Therefore, the theoretical capacity, patients per day, is somewhere between 48 and 96. Then as you go down the rows, you have phlebotomy, central line, exam, private infusion, and infusion. As you can see, if they have more than 4 patients in for private infusions, they've got trouble. If they have more than 160 patients in for infusions, obviously they're in trouble. As you can see, the capacity there floats anywhere between 10 and 160, depending on how quickly folks are moving through, depending on the nature of the infusion itself. The next slide shows capacity and demand mismatches. This is where it becomes interesting. As they start to say theoretical capacity in the second row, and the third column is current demand. There's no problem there with about 60 patients per day coming in for vital signs, about 10 requiring phlebotomy, but down there next to the last row, private infusion, they're getting about 6 patients per day requiring private infusion. And there's the rub. Something has to be done to fix that, otherwise they're constantly under the gun. So you may want to look in your own practice and do that fine level analysis. The way you would do that, obviously stepping back several slides, you'd start with what are the different components of your system, what's the total process in minutes, including paperwork, and you could ask people to do a simple queuing analysis. At the phlebotomist, you'd say, okay, could you keep looking at the clock and for maybe a couple of days, write down the time at which you start your first patient and then the time at which you start your second patient and then the time at which you start your third. That's simple queuing theory to understand the cycle time from start to start. That would include, obviously, all those little things that happen between the patients, the phone call, the paperwork, the running down the hall to grab something and the like. Then look at the break time, and therefore you can begin to estimate the range of visits per day. The slide titled Provider Availability Per Each Half Day, AM and PM, begins to expose something that's true in most of our practices. In most of our practices, we think we have a pretty steady supply. What we really have varies quite widely. This is a practice that was looking at number of MDs available per half day. And as you can see, the true availability per half day fluctuated anywhere from 10 to about 19. And that's a huge fluctuation, almost double. I see in typical residency programs, you can have anywhere from 2 residents to 8 or 10 on some days. With huge fluctuations in the capacity, it's very hard in an office system to shove, push, or cajole patients to come on those days. It becomes a great deal of work, all of which goes uncompensated, all of which slows us down in our office practices. So we're trying to get away from that. Ultimately, what we do with this graph, when we start to see these wild fluctuations in capacity, we work to smooth our capacity over time. By smoothing our capacity, we're able to meet the relatively steady demand, because demand does not fluctuate like this, except when we begin to put unnatural constraints onto the system. So that's why we get a bit more of a boost on Mondays, because typically we're not open Saturday, Sunday, which is fine. I'm not in my practice. I'm not saying we have to be open Saturday and Sunday, but therefore I'm willing to accept the increase in volume on Mondays. So when we see a huge fluctuation in capacity, we have bought a great deal of work trying to shape the demand to our wild vacillations in capacity, and that's not helpful. So take a look at what's happening within your own practice and see when are your team members really there and how much capacity do they have when they're really there as opposed to what you think you have scheduled. If you have folks who are off to grand rounds, who have teaching or research duties, you may find that the actual capacity is very different and fluctuates widely, in which case you would need to have some very frank discussions about making the office practice setting work. The next slide is an example of mismatches in capacity and demand in a GI clinic. We have in the bars the patient demand. We have in the lower blue line, we have the provider capacity. And in the upper green line, we have the room capacity. And you can see right away there on Wednesday a.m., we have quite a problem because we have less room capacity than we have providers. So there's unused resource, but at least the patient demand doesn't exceed that. So that worked out okay, but we had providers who might have been seeing patients but had no rooms. We have lots of days with lots of extra rooms, and some days where we have too few providers. Again, very typical, we'll see a mismatch towards the tail end of the week, as you see in this practice, when the providers would typically like to be somewhere else, but the patient demand continues. Friday AM is a good example of that. We need to smooth our demand. We need to smooth our capacity and try to meet the demand as it comes in. If we have a consistent increase in demand on a Monday, for instance, we ought to staff well on Monday. The next slide gives an example of that from a primary care practice. The total provider telephone visit demand is in the brown line with the dots, the total daily demand. You see, typically, their demand is highest on a Monday. While they have capacity in excess of demand, which, again, is very typical in the practices, even though they don't feel they do, their capacity is lowest on a Monday, which doesn't make good sense. A practice in primary care should never staff lowest on a Monday, or they're going to be running to catch up all the rest of the week. So this is a practice that has inadvertently hurt itself by staffing low. So we have to have frank discussions about who wants to be off on Monday and why, and can we possibly think of some other way to pull that off in a primary care setting, because it just doesn't make good sense. I do want to point out in this example, in almost every practice that begins the work of advanced access, the perception is that we have demand that is insatiable, that just blows us away in terms of how much work there is to do, and there's no way we can meet it. I'm showing you a real example in this slide of a practice that believes that as well, and this is a very typical example when we do an analysis in a practice. We find that the capacity in almost every setting exceeds the demand. And then we have to figure out why is it so difficult to gain the perception that the capacity is well, that the demand is well within the ability of our team. And that's going to be in a later call when we start talking about office efficiency and flow, where we can begin to recover the capacity from our team so that we can apply it to the work as opposed to uncompensated rework based on the perception or the myth of insatiable demand. The next slide, again from Dana-Farber, the Jimmy Fund Clinic, is an example of understanding the flow of an office visit, and that's in the arrows on the top. Patients come in, they check in, they have vitals, go to phlebotomy and exams, but not every patient does that. As you see in the left-hand column there in the different rows, we have an exam-only patient, chemo, injection or infusion, and procedure, and they'll require different resources within the clinical setting. It's important for me to understand if I'm trying to manage a complex place like this because I need to know how to staff lab and phlebotomy. I also want to be inventive about the flow so that I can get all the work done in a timely manner and have patients receive the care that they need and not be standing in queues within my treatment facility. Do I need more infusion rooms? So we begin to see from this example how different patient types will flow through. So in this clinical setting, it makes a lot of sense to understand the different flows. An exam-only patient flow is going to be very different from a chemo injection, from a chemo infusion, from procedures. Start to tease those things apart if it's clinically appropriate from the patient perspective, if you're going to create different flows. An example of where these guys went with this, they recognized that having everybody come in through a common portal up front and all at the same time in the morning messed them up in one way when they had patients who were coming in to have an MRI scan standing at the back of the line waiting to check in, then they were 45 minutes late getting into the MRI scanner. That set the scanner behind by 45 minutes for the rest of the day. So they created a pull-out strategy to say, let's see if we can recognize that first MRI patient of the day, pull them out of the line and get them right in. We see all that now when we take flights and you'll see them pulling people out of line who are maybe got to the airport a little bit late and whose flight's going to leave pretty soon. It actually serves the practice well to do that so that the scanner is on time. They got to understand that by looking at this level of information, understanding the various processes and understanding the various capabilities at each one of these levels. The next slide, identifying the constraint, is something that's only possible when we have this information of capacity and demand. So here we show it on one slide in a different way. Again, we see from the Jimmy Fund Clinic, we have the bar of demand with maybe you call it a confidence interval going up and down. And we have that square of capacity. And in almost every setting, we're fine with that, except for nursing. It appears that nursing may be a bottleneck may be having some trouble here. We may need to grow the capacity of nursing, or we need to extinguish demand. And that's what's going to come up in a future call when we start talking about how to match capacity and demand. How do we begin to shape demand, grow capacity, or extinguish demand? All of this work allows us to ask the important questions. There's a lineup at Vitals. Why? Well, patients are all arriving at the same time. Why? Patients want to show up early. Why? Well, patients who show up early get through the clinic faster. Why? Well, because we're scheduling this first come, first serve. Well, why is that? We end up hurting ourselves by doing that. We can ask the questions once we begin to have the information. So you may uncover in your practice, as I've seen in some, we have a terrific bolus of demand on Thursday. Well, why is that? That's odd. We don't see a natural incidence of disease by day of week. So something in the system is creating this this bolus of demand on that day of the week. Well, we're not open on Wednesday afternoons because that's our conference day and everybody goes off. Well, there's the explanation. Do we have to do that? Is there some way to reinvest some capacity into Wednesday afternoon so that we don't have that double bolus of Monday and Thursday, which is difficult to manage unless we can bring a large team to bear and have the resources on hand to meet that demand? We've created extra work. We can ask the questions once we have the information at our fingertips. The change concept that you guys are going to visit in a future call for matching capacity and demand will be starting with improving predictions. How can we begin to be even more fine-tuned in our understanding of the nature of demand that's coming at us? We'll then talk about reducing or shaping demand, smoothing the workflow, which starts, by the way, again, right back with our capacity. We can smooth the workflow when we can better staff to the work. Identifying and managing the constraint is only possible when we can begin to look at the capacity and demand for the different parts of our system, therefore have some understanding from data the nature of the constraint. Adjusting to peak demand, again, is only possible when we understand the nature of demand, when we have understood the portals of entry and put counting mechanisms in front of each one of those portals using very simple tools, a telephone demand tracking sheet, which you can use for walk-ins and electronic scheduling as well. And then finally, the use of contingency plans. Those are the plans that we use to close the gap between capacity and demand. Other high-leverage changes that you guys will visit in future calls will be reducing appointment types and simplified scheduling, talking about the team that you develop to match the work, and production planning. Even having the conversation about what team do we need to configure to meet the demand will be based on the nature of capacity and demand. As we see in the Jimmy Fund example, we see that we have a bottleneck with nursing, so that's where we're going to turn first. Is there some way to decompress the work that the nurses are doing so that they can therefore have a better match between their capacity and demand? Only possible when we have the data. Final thoughts. In order to solve the flow problems, the healthcare delivery system needs to be looked at as one entity. We need to put it together and understand the complexity of our larger systems and how they work together. The frontline staff have to be empowered and be part of any solution because they live this day to day. You want the vertical slice of your organization to be part of the design team that begins to do this analysis. If they're not bought in with what's happening, they're going to have a tough time understanding why they're doing this extra work of telephone demand tracking and how it's going to work. And by bringing them into the process, right away they're going to have suggestions on how to make it better because they've probably been living with something for a long time and understand how to begin to smooth the flow. And final thought is recognizing variability and smoothing artificial variability as the only answer. Artificial variability, the nature of the way we staff our clinical enterprise is not very helpful. Artificial variability that comes from having wild fluctuations in our capacity to do the work makes it more difficult for us to match capacity demand on a daily basis. So that's the end of the formal presentation, and what I'd like to do is to ask Kurt to come back on and open up for questions.
Thank you very much, Gordon. If you have a question for Gordon, all you have to do is press 1 on your phone's touch-tone keypad. That will put you into our question queue. When your turn comes up, I'll call on you by the city and the first name of the person who registered at your location. If your question is answered while you are in line, simply press the pound key, and it will take you out of the queue. We also ask that when you call, when I call on your location, that you identify yourself by the first name and the vocation, such as nurse practitioner, administrator, and so forth. If you're listening on a speakerphone and it's at all possible, please pick up the handset when you ask your question. We'll all be able to hear you much better that way. And a reminder, when you're replacing the handset, remember to press the speakerphone button so you're not disconnected. If you do disconnect, just dial back in, re-enter your PIN number, and you'll come right back into the program. So if you have a question, go ahead and press 1 now. If your question is answered while you're in line, pressing the pound key will take you out of the queue. And just a reminder, you can also submit your questions via email to modc@krm.com. And at this point, our first question is from Ames, Iowa, for Penny's location. The line is open. Go ahead with your question, please. Ames, Iowa, are you with us?
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
My name is Penny, and I am a nurse in quality improvement, and my question is...
Penny, could you speak up just a bit? It's a little difficult to hear you.
Yes. My question is...
Thank you.
The speaker talked about taking the one-week snapshots of demand. How often would that be repeated to try and check on improvement and for stability?
We don't have to repeat too often. What we find typically is that we're pretty close. We don't want to take the slowest week of the year or the most busy. Take an average week, and it's going to give us enough information to begin to understand what's happening in our practice. Ultimately, we don't need to measure the demand on an ongoing basis. It's burdensome. We just have to have enough information to begin to feed the pipeline of improvement so we can begin to understand how our team comes together to do that work. So we may repeat it once or maybe do it twice, but beyond that, I think we see quite a drop-off in the utility of that measurement because we see that typically is not a huge variation. We will see things, as you saw in some of those early slides from Community Pediatrics in Mayo, that the nature of demand may begin to tail off over time as we begin to work on matching patients with their identified clinician and clinical team. We don't need to have a measure of demand on an ongoing basis to understand the health and utility of doing the work of open access, advanced access. We use other metrics for that, number of days to third available appointment, percent of future appointment scheduling that's open. Those are much better indicators and usually much more easily obtained than the demand.
And does that answer the question, Ames?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that question. We're going next to Warren, Michigan, and our other caller at this point is from Wenatchee, Washington. To Warren, Michigan, to Vincent's location. The line is open. Go ahead, please.
Hi. My name is Sherry Trimbath. I'm a family practitioner in a residency office, and my question for you is, how do you match the supply and demand when you have many part-time providers? We have faculty who the most anybody sees is 50%, and then we have residents who have requirements also for office hours, but never more than 40% and often more like 20%.
There are several parts of that. First is just understanding the nature of what you have. You recognize right away that it's quite a complex setting in primary care because of the nature of the components you're putting together to create a team. In a residency practice setting, the most intelligent or useful way to configure a team is to think about the smallest possible team unit that can have relatively constant capacity over the course of a week. And when we think about residents coming in for a half day here and there, obviously we need to configure a team that's beyond just residents. So we have the part-time faculty, sometimes nurse practitioners, others who come together to create small horizontal teams. Horizontal, I mean, over the course of a week. So as you look at that complex scheduling right now, we're trying to put all the pieces of the puzzle together to meet the demand. If we do it from the perspective of meeting demand, we can begin to smooth out the jumps and fall that make it very difficult to truly meet the patient demand. It can be done in a residency practice setting. I've seen it done in residency practice settings, but it is more complex because of the part-time nature of the folks there. Any clinician who's working only a fraction of the week seeing patients has a tough time calling themselves a continuity or primary care provider as an individual, but will have no trouble calling themselves that as part of a team. Patients don't just get sick 2 days a week. They need someone there all the time. So what's the glue that holds that practice together? That's how you begin to ask the question.
Thank you. That was helpful.
And thanks to Warren, Michigan. Again, a reminder to all of our listeners, all you need to do is press 1 on your phone's touchtone keypad. That will bring you into the question queue. At this point, we have one other call in the queue, and that's to Richard's location in Wenatchee, Washington. Wenatchee, the line is open. Go ahead, please.